Yes, we are. Let's look at the participants.
Okay.
Jen, do you want to start?
Sure. So based on our last call, there was no, you know, magic. I mean, except the shop and drop was amazing, but we thought initially the best thing for all of us to be able to do is hear from each organization what's going well and maybe an area of need or challenge. So if we, and I don't know that I have access to call on different people, but for everyone who's comfortable to just introduce themselves and say, you know, what's going well at your organization and then what are some of your challenges. And then we'll take the second half of the meeting to discuss some things that came up and explore further. And I think our last meeting was a great example of all of us sharing and then having the opportunity to learn more about the shopping program. Rebecca, do you want to maybe start us off as an example, or did I miss anything?
The only thing I could say is that you can raise your hand, you guys. There's a way to raise your hand somehow if you want to talk, or you can just raise your hand like that. That works too. Okay, sorry, Rebecca.
Well, no, it's okay. It's just, it's so interesting because I think everybody on here has such varied roles and responsibilities and sizes of agencies. So what we're able to do is going to look very different, but I think that, you know, for example, at our agency, we're just keeping up with the deliveries. We just keep doing deliveries and throwing gift cards in the deliveries, and that's what has worked easiest in Fairfield County. So, and just keeping it short so that we have time to go through everyone.
Okay. I can't maybe raise the hand. Lisa, do you want to do the part where you call on people?
Sure.
Sure.
Jody, what's happening in Hawaii? Anything that you want to tell us about? And be brief, I guess.
We're doing great.
Okay. We're going to need to find out what you're doing. No, that's so great. But does anyone have anything they want to share instead of me calling on people?
Yeah.
That might not be the best way. Yeah, okay, great. Tony.
Okay, and this is just in response to COVID, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so, well, yeah. Well, I'm trying to maintain the other programs as well. So, we are doing the volunteer check.
Can you tell us what community you're from?
Oh, I'm sorry, Nashville, Tennessee. We're doing the volunteer calls, the check-ins with them. We're doing volunteers that we call cyber seniors. So if someone needs help delivering, ordering groceries and having them delivered, we have that. That's a normal program, but we've tweaked it a little bit, only for groceries and connecting with your loved ones, help with FaceTime. We did start something new. We call it COVID Conversations, and it's basically a free 20-minute, not a consultation or assessment, but a conversation with a social worker. And that is really, it came out of me having a couple calls from some of our seniors or people in the community that said, you know, I'm just tearful and I'm not sure what's going on. There's nothing wrong. And I just don't know what's wrong with me. Maybe I need some counseling. And so then when I talk with them, and it took about 20 minutes, and I'm like, oh, well, what your experience is perfectly normal, you know, given the circumstances. They're like, okay, so I don't need counseling. So we're doing that. And then this week, we're going to deliver toilet paper masks that volunteers have made in the community and gloves.
Great.
So that's what we're doing.
Hey, Tony, thank you. I think I wrote down COVID conversations. Maybe when we get to the end, we can go back. Oh, sorry. Oh, yeah, yeah. We can go back to that.
Okay, sure.
I'm going to mute.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. I'd be happy to share.
Thanks, Susan. Yeah.
So I'm Susan from Montreal, from OMETS. We have two major social service agencies here, ours, which are Family Services, and Cummings Center for Seniors, which is our sister agency dealing with seniors. We've pretty well, for the purposes of the pandemic, merged. We've set up a helpline, a community helpline staffed by the two agencies, which gets over 100 calls a day. Federation, our federation has reacted amazingly. They set up 200 volunteers. The agencies have pivoted to be doing much all of our social service work online. New groups, especially for employment, therapeutic, and connections. We're doing everything online. We're offering 4 free sessions with our counseling department, with our therapists, for people who feel that they want to talk. We've done thousands of baskets and deliveries, primarily to housebound seniors. And we're providing direct financial assistance, groceries. We have a loan program that's set up specifically for COVID for small family businesses. That I made notes, like Lisa said, I should. That's pretty well it. It's been an amazing pulling together of community resources and volunteers. So
that's been exciting. Has that been a real silver lining and exciting to be able to work in partnership so well with these agencies?
It really has been. I think it'll have. It'll be involved in our strategic planning going forward about what kind of intake we need for community, what kind of data, because Federation clearly is asking for, we all have our own data, how we have coordinated that data that they need in response to their fundraising and development is different and interesting. And I'll tell you, among colleagues, a little frightening, because they would really like a database of every single person served, and obviously we can't do that. So there is a silver lining and a lot of new learnings among the players. So it has its moments.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Anyone else want to share anything?
I can share if you want.
Sure.
Okay, so I'm Hillary. I'm in Jacksonville, Florida. And one of the things that we're doing in conjunction with working with our Federation and United Way, giving out relief checks through our food program, is we have a food pantry that's still open, and anybody from the Jewish community gets unlimited access to it. We're still delivering our Meals on Wheels, but we've added kind of a third component of something we're doing a we do food boxes for survivors, and it's farm to table. And so it's 5 or 6 fresh fruits or vegetables. We get eggs and a grain. And so we've been able to get some funding to increase that, because our goal is to have the seniors not leave their house. So we're trying to bring as much to them with the least amount of contact as possible. So we've now opened it up a little bit to the community of people that can't use the pantry or can't get the Meals on Wheels, that they need the fresh fruits and vegetables. So we've kind of increased that for our seniors, and we have a company that we've been using for years. And so it's organic and it's fresh and it's local, and the clients and people from the community seem to really enjoy it. So that's kind of something new that we've expanded on that's been really helpful. Mm. Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
That's actually a really great point for everyone, Hillary. You know, we're rolling into May, and all the CSAs and all the farms, you know, this is the time where they're opening up, and this is a great opportunity to reach out, because they're going to have food that might go to waste. So right. This is a great food rescue opportunity.
They definitely have food that's going to go to waste, and they, you know, they're gloving, they're masking. We've done it also, like everybody else, with the no contact, and they are literally leaving the box at the porch, and then the client or their caregiver will bring it inside. So they're taking really great safety concerns, and so it's been a great partnership, because, you know, we're able to get what we need for our seniors, and we're kind of able to help another agency. So it's great.
That sounds good. Yep.
Yep.
I was just talking with someone today, JFS Houston, who was saying that they're getting a lot of food from farms, or maybe it was in Florida. I can't remember. Because all of the food is going to waste because they can't give it to restaurants, right? Because the restaurants are closed. So
I can share from LA. We have a master kind of for all our different programs. It's been a challenge to bring. We have senior programs and DV programs and all kinds of programs all have food needs, and trying to bring that all together on one spreadsheet where we can, as things come up, we had an opportunity with Subway or an opportunity with the city, and then we have some kosher people because our home delivered meals are full. So it's been a lot of learning and collaborating across programs, because to try to, you know, we have a food pantry, we have the home delivered meals, they have wait lists. So how do we put everyone on one list with all the data that we need and then pull it back out? And then we've had some challenge around when something comes up, how do we reach out to all these people, some of whom we've known as clients and some are brand new people, to say, do you want this delivery from Subway? It's not going to cost them anything. We had a relationship that it was, you know, $30 for six meals a week. The delivery was taken care of, but it's, so that's been a lot of both like great things where things are happening and we can reach out to people, but operationally figuring out how to all do it has been quite a challenge.
Okay. Anyone else have any programs to share with us that we might find interesting that we might be able to do in our own agencies? We haven't already talked about. That dog is loud, Jen.
Hi, I'm Deisha with Jewish Family Service in Denver. New to this group, thought I'd share what we're doing out here. So kind of go do a quick run through of our programs. We have a food pantry. Normally it's open 3 days a week and our clients get 12 visits. What we've done is we switched that to a drive-through system. Anybody could come get food. They don't have to be a part of our pantry. And those that are clients of our pantry, the food that they're getting is not counting towards their 12 visits for the year. We are also doing, let me back up, sorry. We opened that from 3 days a week now to 4 days a week. And we are doing home deliveries 2 times a week. And then for our seniors department, we are doing telehealth calls, as well as continuing with our kosher meals on wheels. And then we have our mental health department, our kid success, refugee mental health, and regular mental health services. They all moved over to telehealth services. And then my department, which is the homeless prevention and rapid rehousing, we've had to put a halt on our Raptor housing program because we just couldn't do it at the moment. But we got DOLA funding from Department of Housing, and we've been working with people who have been directly affected by COVID-19 to help them with their rents to stay in their homes. We're definitely seeing an increase in people looking for housing as well as motel vouchers. Mm-hmm. And going back to our food, the needs of our community. We used to serve about 50, 60 people a day in our pantry. Now we're seeing at least 100 people, sometimes 200. So a huge need for food and personal items.
Thank you. You're doing a lot. I guess everyone's doing a lot. Is this someone in 609 that wants to say something? In area code 609?
Okay, I'm on the phone here. Hello?
Hi, what's your name? And where are you
from? I'm Beverly.
Hi, Beverly.
I'm Beverly from Princeton. So we are doing a lot of similar things. We're doing webinars on senior topics for our teams, for counseling. Our pantry is also seeing many more people coming. It's a we're doing the grab and go. We have a kosher cafe that is grab and go. And kosher meals on wheels we're still doing, but we're supplementing. We've gotten so many more requests. We're doing volunteer shopping for our seniors and just trying to keep up with it all. It's a lot. Food is a big thing and anxiety.
Yeah. You bring up something important, which is
hello?
Are you saying something else? Yeah, what?
Yeah, no, we do weekly check-ins, and that's where we're seeing the anxiety and, coming through the seniors, yeah.
So what I was going to say is you bring up something important. You were talking about it, hello, from the client's point of view, but I was interpreting it as from us, from staff's point of view. It's exhausting how much more potentially you all are working than you did when you were in the office, and it can really lead to a lot of anxiety and stress. That's all I was about to say. But Jen, you wanted to?
I was curious. It sounds like we're hearing from different people dealing with shopping, dealing with calls. I know we have a mix of sizes of agencies, but I'm wondering how people are handling the new people and screening tools, and if that's been a challenge. Because, you know, we have a range of programs where we know the clients, we're working with them, and we're transitioning with those clients. But then we've had a huge influx of new people calling. And that, for us, I think has been the biggest challenge, because we have a small intake team trying to figure out how to assess those needs. And I wonder how people are dealing with that or seeing that. The influx of new.
Sandy, are you trying to talk with us? Yep.
Hi, I'm Sandy. Or which Sandy?
Sandy Lowe.
Yes, thank you. That's me. I'm from JFS in Seattle. And for what we are doing, two things. One, we do have staff in some other programs that now are left with, they're not able to work because they do in-home work with clients. And for the most part, we've stopped that. As well as we have staff whose most of their job was doing on the in-home visits, half of that time is travel. Because as you know, when you go back and forth to do in-home, you actually have a lot of time where you're on the road. So even if they're doing televisits with their clients, they now have the travel time available. So we have redeployed those staff. And in a, I wouldn't say an easy process, but we've managed to retrain them remotely without anybody being in the same place at the same time, and coming up with processes. We feel like we're building the plane while we're flying it. But that has helped increase both our capacity to give service, but also to do the intakes and sure. figure
what
out
did what training look like. What did that train, when you say, was it a PowerPoint? Was it just?
No, we haven't had time to actually be that sophisticated.
Sure.
So we really just do that, what you're saying. Done, you know, basic foot to ground. Let's write out our processes. We're having a 2-hour Zoom meeting. Ask questions, go and do it. Keep asking questions, meeting. You know, that sort of thing.
That. Is there one person that's been dedicated to?
We have, I'm overseeing the overall framework of it, but then I have a case manager who's doing the basic training, another person who's the contact person for all the questions. And then honestly, each day, almost twice a day, we seem to be revising the process to make it smoother. But it is working to do that. I think the biggest challenge we have is we, for our food banks, we can add new home delivery because we have the we can't have the capacity for people to take phone calls and emails. And we are lucky, our local paratransit agency, in order to keep their drivers busy, since they're no longer doing medical appointments and so on, they are now doing all of our food deliveries because we no longer have volunteers doing that. So we can expand our capacity. But what we're having trouble with is, as someone else mentioned this, we're not able to really get data. We're not getting the data that we certainly have gotten in the past. Our funders are pretty understanding, but even internally, it's a little frustrating to not know exactly who we're serving. And that's particularly true for our food pantry, where it is grab and go, and we are not in. We're doing this with the least contact possible. So we don't ask a name. We don't ask if you've been before. Somebody shows up at the door during the designated hours and we hand it out. So that is probably going to be a
It feels like more people are asking for more data right now than they ever asked for before. And in a way I understand, because we're trying to get more funds to try to help, but at the same time, we're in the middle of this really intense time and they're saying, but what percentage and how many calls were about this? So I think, Lisa,
I know.
Thank you. Lisa, I think we had some other people.
Right. So Laura Flowers, then Susan Cartman, then Mary from Columbus. You guys are raising your hand and we're catching them.
Hi, yeah, I'm Laura from a JFCS from Philadelphia, and I just wanted to respond to the question about how to respond to increased clients calling in needing help. So it sounds like it's pretty much what Sandy was just saying they did. We retrained some of our administrative staff, and we also have bus drivers who do normally do shopping van routes. We retrained them to answer intake phone calls through a Zoom training. So we were able to get a lot more people answering live phone calls as people are calling and asking for help.
So you said retraining for live phone calls. Are your phones ringing live to people at home?
So we have an intake toll-free number that is on our website given out. So anyone can call that to ask for services. And when they call that phone number, a live person answers to help them. Right.
From where? From their home? Or because we have that too, and it was live.
Yeah.
But we've moved remote, so now it's a method.
We use it's the Verizon OneTalk app.
It's an app that you use?
It will ring, like if you have the app on your smartphone, whenever that number is called, it'll ring for whoever has the app open and working.
Wow.
So anyone can pick it up. Yeah.
We have the same system here in Montreal. Our phones are answered live. The one difference that we did, I think that works for us, so we set up this helpline with a number, and the number rings, you sign into the app. Ours is on Bell. You sign into the app. We have dispatchers and responders. So dispatch answers the phone. It's easy to capture the number of calls. What dispatch doesn't have to be an intake worker. It might be a professional, but it might be anybody. And they really sort the call. They can determine, just it's a triage. So they can determine where it needs to go by demographic or by need. Then we have the next, they transfer it to a responder. The responder is a professional staff person. And like our colleague who just spoke before, we've redeployed most of what we had, not huge staff cuts, but people are able to do a little bit more because, yes, they don't have to drive and they don't have to park and they all those things. So people take a half day or a day on the line. And that's what we do. We've gotten almost 50% of our calls are new callers, which is great. I mean, we're very happy about that. And so there is more volume, but dispatch does the triage. Responders do the social service response, or they may do an advocacy, or they may do information. Uh-huh. You asked about training. Training we're doing, but what we really found is that we had too much information. You know, there's so much information on resources and how to apply and what's available. Fair amount of time was set, was in organizing that information into a number of files by category so that a responder doesn't have to know everything, but she knows to go to this place on the web that says, this is how you apply for employment insurance, or this is how you apply for a wage subsidy, or this is where you go if you're Hasidic and you need a food basket. So we have all that information. It was quite a bit of organization, but we're running very smoothly now.
Huh. I have a question about the phone system. I want to understand from both of you, and I don't know if other people are using this phone system. Is it through Verizon or that you can get this app? Because we didn't have that.
I'm in Canada.
We're
Canadian. So I don't know what works for you.
Yeah.
I would have to ask our IT department. I don't know how the app was set up or if it's paid for.
And well, I'll email you offline, or maybe we can post it for everyone because we have a facilities person too. And one of our big inefficiencies has been moving off site. We haven't had a system where we can have someone picking up those calls that we're comfortable with, really, because we don't want it to be an admin. It's sometimes someone suicidal or someone mentally ill. And so, you know, and we don't want a manager to necessarily be picking up calls. So it's really slowed down everything for us. Are most people still doing live response?
I'm from JFS Detroit. We use a Comcast system and have a Comcast business app. And it also, all our phone numbers are transferred to the app on our cell phones. So we can answer through the app from home, and when we call clients, it shows our desk lines, which is really nice. And so like our main resource center number is able to still be answered live, and it hasn't slowed up our communication with clients in any way.
So do you, can more than one person get the call or just one at a time?
So our resource line is going to, I think, 5 different staff right now, and they're each answering it at home, and it goes to the regular voicemail, so they can still pick up voicemails from an online portal. They can just check it through a website.
Right. We had that at my old agency. It was voice over in-person phone or something like that. But your whole system has to change. And anyone, it's just like the phone rings in your office. It rings with everyone, you know, on your staff, and whoever picks it up. And then they can transfer it, or they can just take the message and, you know, tell the person. But Mary, it's not Mary from Columbus, excuse me. It's Mary Columbus. From where?
It's actually Mary Worley from Columbus.
Oh, it is. Okay, good. Okay.
So a couple of things. One, so the most recent, since you're talking about phones, our main line actually gets forwarded to our receptionist at home. And she answers that. But we also have a what's called our access point, where people are calling in for services. And that is answered by another staff person that always does our access point intake. Mm-hmm. And that's forwarded to her home phone. But if she misses it, it just goes to the work voicemail. But we've all been using Google Voice.
Oh.
So instead of using our home numbers when we're calling clients or anything, we use a Google Voice number, and we all have direct desk numbers, desk lines, and our clients usually get those when they get assigned to us. And so that's being forwarded to Google Voice. And then I can just answer that while I'm here on my computer, or it'll ring to my cell phone. But it just shows that it's my work number. And so when I call clients, it just looks like me calling. I don't, you know, none of us wanted to give out our personal cell phone numbers or anything. We're also using Google Drive and Google Forms. And we put on our, especially for clients that are coming into our website looking for services, we actually have a direct link to Google Forms to get all of their information, and we can keep that in a spreadsheet. And our staff have actually been using that too, to especially with the new COVID, you know, we're asking, you know, are you calling because of COVID-19 and what are your needs, so that we can keep it in a spreadsheet and be able to report to Jewish Columbus the numbers that they're asking for. But, you know, we also do use a database called Best Notes, which is very similar to, it can be a medical, mental health, or school type of database. And we've been using that so that we can actually, like, run reports of specific data that that they want. And we're in the process of converting that so that people who want to become clients or are clients can create their own account on there, and we can have them digitally sign documents and fill those out. We can send them documents from Best Notes now to sign. So the informed consent and releases of information and things, we can send those to them. But those are, that's kind of how we're managing that. And then when it comes to training, we're using Microsoft Office Teams.
Uh-huh.
And we can actually set up trainings through that for staff and record it, and then just keep it on our agency staff site so that anybody, any of the staff, can access it.
What types of trainings have you done?
Well, mostly the ones that I've done are all Best Notes trainings. So teaching the staff how to record some of the, you know, we added new data points for COVID. So teaching the staff, you know, how to add those and put those in, because you can share screens just like Zoom, but it only stays in one place. You don't have to record it and then send people a link. It's just right there.
I see. I'm wondering, Lisa and Rebecca, thank you. There's things coming up that we could do a poll. I don't know how to do it, but I hear you can do it on Zoom. There's data collection issues, there's training issues. And I was also interested in sort of how people are managing right now. The question is, how are you managing the inflow of a lot of new clients at a time? And it sounds like people are redeploying, and what does that look like? The shop and drop, even though I didn't end up replicating that, I took a lot of things for what we've been doing for ordering groceries. So I don't know, Lisa, we want to continue on this topic if people have more that they're needing.
Does anyone have anything else they want to say around intakes and what they're doing? I know that, did anyone
raise their hand? Yes, Disha with Denver Jewish Family Service. I just wanted to comment, one of our biggest issues that we were having was trying to remain HIPAA compliant, because basically everybody in our offices became remote workers. So one of the things we were also looking at using, I'm sorry, I'm trying to figure out what they were, somebody just mentioned it, using Google Voice. However, we backed away from that because it's not HIPAA compliant, and we're using Ring Central instead. And then we've been using DocuSign to get our landlords as well as our clients to sign papers because DocuSign's HIPAA compliant. We were trying to use Adobe first, but our compliance department kind of nixed that pretty quickly. as to training new staff, well, so we redeployed a lot of our staff as well. We have in-home care workers who couldn't do their jobs, but we were still trying to maintain them. So we kind of divided them in between some of our departments. Most of them went to our pantry, and the pantry staff trained them on what it is that they needed to do to help make boxes and, you know, bag food and hand that out. With our pantry, we're not doing a whole bunch. What we're really doing is we're going around the clipboard, we're gathering families' names, the number of adults, the number of children, and then what county they live in. And that's like the bare bones of the information we're gathering. And then in terms of, you know, our housing program, our homeless prevention, we have a very small team, but what we had to do was we had to pull in our central intake specialist, as well as three of my interns, myself, and a couple other staff, and retrain everybody on a new intake process. So we divided days. We have a schedule now. We divided days, so each person has a different day that they're going to listen to our emergency rental line on. Mm-hmm. They'll call those people back. They will conduct phone assessments. And then at the end of each day, we have a 4 p.m. standing meeting, Zoom meeting, where we discuss each client, whether they qualify for assistance. And whoever's day it was that took the calls, that becomes their clients. They, you know, do our intake forms with them, gather the client proofs, and then it's handed off to me, and I deal with landlords, and then I hand it off to somebody else who does the financial piece and pays the rent. And so that's just how we're doing it right now. That's how we're kind of keeping our head above water.
Yeah.
I have a question, Lisa. How many people on your team that are doing it?
So right now it's our CIS, three interns,
wow,
my employment coordinator stepping in as needed, and then myself, so about six of us.
How are you doing the financial assistance piece? Are you collecting backup documents via the phone and screening for all that? And what's your volume looking like?
Yeah, so what we do is we have a phone initial phone assessment, and that just helps us kind of weed people out. We're looking for people who have been directly impacted by COVID. Mm-hmm. And then once we have our 4 p.m. call, we decide, okay, you know, do they meet the requirements, yes or no? And then once I decide on the eligibility, next step is that person whose day it was, the case manager, they will call the person back and do a intake over the phone and the request proof. So IDs, proof of income, proof of how COVID, you know, has affected them. And we're asking that comes in. I mean, we have a Dropbox that if people want to come to our agency and drop off their forms in, they can. We are taking it by fax. We have an electronic fax for my department, so that's handy. I've gotten most of our clients to download a free scanning app on their phone called CAM Scanner. So they can take, you know, they can scan their paperwork and then send it to us.
You put that in the chat when you finish with the call?
Yes.
But so you have a lot of good ideas. I mean, I think that's really important because I think this is so new, this whole idea of doing intakes and new people, and some are not getting as much information as they want. Some are getting an awful lot and having a lot of people involved.
And so you're doing a lot with interns, it sounds like, also.
Yeah, so thankfully we've had them for most of the year. They're kind of towards the end of their internship, but they were already to the point where they had a couple people on their caseload, so they understood how the process worked. And they're not doing anything different now than what they were before. It's just a higher volume. We're just not providing case management to these new people. We're just providing emergency financial assistance for April and most likely May. So the process seems to go a lot quicker, and with us dividing it in between a couple people, that's really helped. So I mean, we're only on week two of this new process, but so far so good.
Terrific.
I'm curious if people who we can see can raise their hands. I'm not sophisticated enough yet on Zoom. How many people are doing emergency financial assistance re-COVID?
Oh my God.
Is that everybody?
I think it's about half, maybe not a lot of people.
Yeah,
I mean, I think for all of us, that could be a whole topic, because hearing you're doing it daily, like how are you operationalizing this and how many people are you doing and what level of screening are you doing? We sort of started with that.
Right.
And I just want to say.
Okay, so hold on.
Go ahead.
Are you suggesting that we do a whole topic on just financial assistance and how you're giving it out during the COVID-19?
Well, I'd like to understand what the group would be interested in. I mean, to me, that things that have been helpful to me are the phone and sort of hearing how people are structuring their training and their level of support for new staff. Because that's for me, bringing people in who are suddenly doing new tasks. As an agency, we're looking at that. But I don't know how to do a poll to see what other people are interested in.
Right. Yeah. So I was just going to say, if everyone can write in the chat what you're interested in discussing, that would be super helpful for us to determine what's the best needs of this group. Two people seem to raise their hands, but I can't find them anywhere. So whoever raised their hand, just talk to us about this. Or did not? No one raise their hand. Okay. Sorry.
This is Hillary in Jacksonville. I can just kind of add that we, through the United Way, were recipients every year, because we get a lot of hurricanes. We were the recipients of hurricane relief funds. So now we're the recipients of COVID relief funds. So we're helping Jewish and non-Jewish, but we have a structure and guidelines that we have to follow because we're using United Way dollars. So it's a little bit different than our regular finance. But it's along the same lines as our regular financial assistance. So we do have, if you need any materials, we can help, because like right now we have 700 people from the city of Jacksonville that were slated to help. So, so we do have the structure, and we have had to also retrain staff to be, you know, people that were in the field that aren't anymore to come in and to help with those efforts. And we kind of do that year after year with the frequency of the hurricanes that we're having here. So now we've just kind of transferred that to our COVID relief.
So Hillary, send that to us.
But yeah. So, I mean, I can talk with the person that's running it, but we can definitely put something together, because we have forms that we send to clients. We primarily do rental assistance, and we're doing utility bills. And they have to show, you know, we have forms that they have to sign. They also have to submit the past 4 paychecks so that we can see the decline in income, because it has to be people that are impacted by COVID. So they have to show that there's some sort of financial impact. So that's kind of how,
so internal. So when they assemble this, it sounds like a grant application for financial assistance or an application. Who reviews that, all the paperwork from the client? You guys?
Our director of financial assistance. Yeah. So we have a team. So there's about 11. I do all the Jewish ones right now. And mm-hmm. for the non-Jewish, we have 11 staff people that have been trained and are reviewing it. And we've made the forms very simple. We email the forms to everybody. We highlight what they have to sign. We give them a face sheet and say, this is what you have to provide. And it's easy. It's very spelled out for them. And then they complete it and they submit it to us. We pay directly. Clients don't receive the money. We pay, right. as per all of our financial assistance, we pay directly to the vendor. So we may have to get a W-9 depending on if it's an apartment complex or things like that. But people are more than willing, to be able to provide the information. So the people that I've been seeing, I've seen probably about 10 so far, and they're very fast returning their documents.
Okay. I think that would be really helpful if you could share the documents, send them to you, okay. Lisa, right?
Okay.
So Amy,
yeah, I'll talk.
Something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I would just add, in terms of emergency financial assistance, what we do. I think the biggest difference, we've always worked with the Jewish community and the non-Jewish community. We've gotten an influx of money for both specific funds. The difference in how we're distributing the money is that previously, when folks would come to us and they might be in arrears for rent, we were very clear about looking for sustainability going forward, because typically we would be able to offer a 1 month grant. What's happening now is when we're thinking about sustainability, we're looking at it much differently. It's enough for us to understand that someone's applying for unemployment or someone is furloughed and the company that they're going back to still exists. We have to be much, much more flexible as far as how we're conceptualizing it. And the big thing is really talking to clients about hopefulness and going back to the anxiety. And because we're in, I don't know how it's going from state to state, truthfully, I'm so swamped with where we are in our own state, but we have a moratorium now on utility shutoffs, and we have a moratorium on evictions and mortgage foreclosures. The part that doesn't get mentioned is that at the end of the moratorium, everything's going to hit the fan, and people are going to need to owe 3 months worth when they haven't been working. And so people are panicking. And even if we're able to offer 1 month, then folks are saying, well, where do I go for the next month? Because unemployment isn't coming in and folks aren't getting their checks. And everything is very patchwork. And so the anxiety of the clients, and then I think there's a whole nother level of anxiety with staff. Mm-hmm. And as a manager, to try to support that so people can get through their day as well while they're dealing with having kids at home and so forth. And just about retraining people, I'm losing people on my team because they are at home with two little kids, and we're just told now their schools and daycares are closed to the end of June. Mm-hmm. So who do you look at first? Who's your client here? So I'm kind of going around a little bit from financial assistance all the way to the anxiety that goes through the whole string of things, but that's what's happening.
Yeah, I think that's very helpful. Also, we've had that with sustainability. What does that mean? What is the care plan right now? Our grant funder said we used to have a plan, and now we're trying to work mm-hmm. with what that looks like.
We have a lot of a lot. We've got a few people on the chat who have really talked about seniors and people who don't have access to technology, and what are people doing? I think that Jody, right from Hawaii, libraries are closed, everything's Zoom, and they have no ability. Mm-hmm. So they're alone. And I don't know if anyone has found out anything or is doing, what they're doing with these kind of clients, if anything. Those are the clients we're most concerned about, right? The most isolated, frail.
So here they're the most vulnerable because they don't have anything. So we recently were working with somebody. We were able to, through our community, get somebody a computer, and I'm working with the internet service to get them free internet. If not, we'll just pay for it at this point. But the problem is on the individual, their frustration level of technology, trying to introduce this to somebody who's in their 90s and trying to Zoom with them and also have social distancing. Thankfully, I know this person, they've been sick, you know, they've been quarantined as well as I've been practicing social distancing. So I've been going over there and helping, but it's not working. So that's our biggest struggle.
It's a big struggle. But, you know, I just remembered we're doing a webinar tomorrow at 3 p.m. The network Uniper is offering free services to get them into people's homes. So without a fee. So I think that's something that people should go to. If you haven't seen it, go to our website. I can't make my screen smaller to actually pull up exactly what it is because I'm recording this, but you should look for it tomorrow at 3, the webinar we're doing on Uniper.
So I don't know what Rebecca thinks. I mean, I'm hearing a lot of future discussing on planning for financial assistance. I mean, I think for me, when the moratoriums end, someone just, and I think planning for financial assistance for when the moratoriums end, I can't see who just suggested that, but that I think is a good, from Sandy in Seattle, and then hearing from people on how they're managing this, not that anyone has the exact answer, but when I started to hear from Jacksonville, or, you know, hearing from, her name disappeared, Decia from Denver, I think it's Decia, just how are we all doing this, because I think that for me would be helpful. I don't know what other people would like to hear from each other, but for us, the financial assistance piece and the training piece, and criteria and how do you set up your forms when you send them out. But I don't know if other people want to speak to what they'd like to learn from each other. Anyone we haven't heard from, maybe.
Is that it? Okay, so I guess we can talk about financial assistance and really talk about forms for sure. But anything else?
And I do agree. I have this, we coined the term here, social reentry. I do think that there's going to be a significant fallout when people have to reenter whatever it's going to look like post COVID-19. So I think it's helpful to know that there's going to be a continued burden on us in the social services sector.
I think it's going to be a lot worse than it is now. And, you know, after June, when the unemployment is over and people and the moratorium is up, people are not going to have the money. They're not going to have the jobs, and we're going to be needed that much more. And that, I'm sure your agencies all know that, your CEOs and COOs and you, that money is going to be really important. And how do you prioritize? Someone had written that. I think that was Rebecca who said, you know, how do you determine who gets what? What are your forms going to look like? How are you doing your intakes and assessing it?
So there was just a question about protocols for gift cards. And I just got one approved that we sent out yesterday, which I'm sure I can share, talking about gift cards during COVID. Who just asked that? Maybe Boston? Sandy? Yeah, so we just had, for size of household, what we're supposed to screen for first, because we have hundreds of people. Do other people? Go ahead.
Can I ask you, I don't know if anyone else has this issue. Our financial director hates gift cards in general. And now that we're relying on them more, she is really putting up a barrier to even using them. Oh. And I'm trying to get information like from our local social service providers. She's worried from the just pure, I don't think she's a social service background accountant. So she, and I do understand accountability and fraud triangles and, you know, all of that. But I do feel like gift cards are a pretty mainstream social service tool. Mm-hmm. And there are pretty rigorous things that you all must be using to, this is for tracking and how they're given out at when we're doing it remotely, when we're not even handing them to people. So we have the ability to do some e-gift cards. Someone has made a donation, and it works beautifully, except that she is wanting us to stop because she doesn't feel that we have a good tracking system. And I just wondered if other people had any kind of financial tracking system that they could share, that I could show her to say, this is common. This isn't just some, you know, our staff are not the only person, only people saying to do this.
I give out $1 million a year in gift cards here in Montreal.
Oh, what?
$1 million.
Yeah.
Okay. Rebecca,
over $1 million.
Yeah, I'm not sure why this is a barrier. I mean, there's a number on the back of the card. You can assign, you know, the client ID number to that card.
Exactly.
Right? That's not rocket science. That's like the easiest thing. We just got a Duncan's grant so that any family in our pantry that we know has kids, we can throw in some extra money when they're coming in over the next couple of months. I mean, the gift, I'm really kind of shocked that somebody would find, I understand putting them through the mail can be an issue, but when you can, it's not that
we're difficult. Doing return receipts, and the ones we're doing by email now that we have these e-ones, we're getting a return receipt. You know how on your email delivery, you can have it.
So Jennifer read. Wanted to say something, I think, right? Jennifer from West Palm. Jennifer, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I was just typing in and I was saying exactly what she was just previously saying. With the gift cards, we are tracking them and we are sending them out, read receipt with a self-addressed stamped envelope for them to return the release that they received it.
Okay.
So we've just kind of created a new system and a way to track it. It's as ideal as we can, you know, during these times. But just to get them, you know, the cards that they need so that they can buy the additional groceries.
Right. So Lori says she'd like to see the tracking system and what forms people are using. So if anyone here has them, please send them to me so I can put them up on the resource library for this affinity group. And I wanted to make sure you guys know this because this is great. I finally found it on my phone. So it's tomorrow from 3 to 4 if you could make it. Last spring, Uniper Care Technologies partnered with the network to help advance Holocaust survivor care, and we offered Holocaust survivors were served by 7 NJHSA member agencies, okay, with access to remote healthcare and connection to social groups. But they just announced, and this is the big news, a new cross-platform service that enables individuals in isolation to connect and engage with healthcare professionals, access with live and interactive health and wellness programs, and communicate with family and friends. This tech-enabled service can be accessed via TV, any TV, tablet, mobile device, desktop, or laptop. So they can do it through television. Uniper is offering NJHSA and AJAS member agencies this new service at no cost. That's the key. As long as the strict social distancing orders are in place by June 1st. So you have a month to do this. The service has a seamless implementation, requires no setup or installation, and is distributed via a secured and encrypted email link or text message to clients sponsoring agencies. So that's it. So I think it's something interesting and something different. And if they can get it through their TVs, then it could be worthwhile for you to attend. That's it, the plug. okay, can you say the name of the service again? It's Uniper. And you have to sign up for the webinar, which is on our website in members only. Go to webinar. And if you don't have the login information, email me and I'll send it to you. And it's the same for everything. You can just keep that somewhere in your files because it doesn't change and you can get all the affinity group information, the webinars, the calendar, etc.
So Lisa, someone just had a question about large amounts of Visa gift cards. I know at JFS we in LA we don't use Visa gift cards, and someone else did use gift cards that we've sort of used that like sending a check to a client. We just don't. We've started to think about it occasionally, but as of now, anyone want to raise their hands if they do Visa gift cards? Rebecca.
I just wanted to say, so we do, but only around the holidays, believe it or not. The only time we really use them is like Hanukkah.
Well, that's nice.
That is nice.
Well, because sometimes they just have things that we can't buy. We don't know how to.
Sure, we've had that come up too.
Rebecca does, she says. Rebecca and Jody, they nodded their heads. They do gift cards.
So Lisa, I want to mention what we were going to do before COVID and see if that were something we could do for the next one. We were going to profile two larger agencies who do financial assistance and maybe two smaller ones and have them present. I'm wondering if Lisa, Rebecca, you guys think that might be a good thing to do for our next meeting. It can be presenting re-COVID, or it can be presenting, but financial assistance looking at profiling a few agencies to present, if people would be interested in A, presenting, B, hearing. Because I know that for me, the shop and drop was extremely helpful. Just getting more in depth on how one place does it can help me sort of for what we do.
Okay, thumbs up or thumbs down for the people we see. I'm sorry, Rebecca.
No, I was just going to say, and looking at the chat, I mean, people really do want to hear about forms and systems. So
what? Thumbs up, thumbs down. Someone talk to us with their fingers.
Yeah, no investment. I don't care either way.
Matthew, what do you think? Thumb up or thumb down? I haven't heard from you. Thumb up. Okay, we got some thumbs up. Sounds good. That's what we'll do. When is the next one? Do you know at the top of your head?
In June, you said.
Okay, I'll do it. June.
Which is could be how we're doing reentry, but we can profile too big, too small. Feel free, Jacksonville, where you are.
And Lisa and Jen, if everybody here feels that, you know, June is things are changing so quickly and everybody would like to have a check-in in May on one of these special interests, I think that, you know, our group could be open to that maybe.
Yeah. I think I'm very interested in this level of, I keep saying it, but that Jacksonville is doing this intense level of financial assistance re-COVID. We wouldn't do it at that same level, but to take a look at your forms and see how you're managing that level, I think would be interesting if you felt you had capacity with helping 700 people to do a training.
I don't know. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's fine. We can do that. We can start. We can send the forms if you want. I'll talk with everybody. If we don't want to wait, because I know everybody's trying to ramp up now, we can probably put something together online, like a PowerPoint that we can at least maybe send out and share with everybody, so we can get it out pretty quickly.
Yeah, so shopping
do we want to do this in May? Is that what we're saying, instead of waiting till June 30th? Thumbs up, thumbs down. Somebody talk to me. Thumbs up. Okay, I'll get it together and send it to you. And you can present there, Hillary. We're going to try to get four agencies in one of them. Okay, terrific. Yeah. That sounds great. Really good.
All right. So,
anyone else have any last words? Okay. I guess that's it. So you guys keep on staying safe and healthy. And Rebecca says thank you so much to everyone. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye, you guys.
Thank you.
Bye.